Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hey everyone, it's Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It's wonderful to have your company for another episode of the show. Now, today is a very special day. I have been looking forward to this particular episode for a very, very long time. My guest today is someone who, in Australia, New Zealand and beyond, needs absolutely no introduction. I'm talking about Dr. Sui Ong. Many of you will know Sui as an oral surgeon working out of New Zealand. He's incredibly skillful. He's incredibly well-regarded. He runs courses for dentists to teach them the basic surgical skills and advanced surgical skills. And what he's also known for is as the founder of the Facebook group DPR. And, you know, that resource has helped so many people in so many ways for so many years. It's such a pleasure to have you on the call today, Sui. Thanks for joining us, mate.
It's a pleasure, Jesse. I was actually wondering when you will invite me onto your podcast.
Oh, well, fair enough, mate. Fair call, mate. I've been looking forward to it for a long time. I thought we invited you some time ago, but anyway, that's okay. It's good that you're here, mate. Now, mate, I first got to meet you, it was some years ago. I don't know if you remember, we were both at a Lumino event in New Zealand. We had a dinner. It was a fancy dress kind of thing. I remember you having a feather boa on, and I remember that meeting after coming back to Australia thinking, you know, Sui really is on a terrific path. He's got this whole future mapped out ahead of him, and obviously a lot of things have been achieved, a lot of goals have been kicked, and you've done tremendously well. But I'm curious to start our conversation, mate, if we can, by just going a little bit back in time, a little bit about your upbringing, how you found your way into dentistry, what attracted you to the profession, and then ultimately what led you to specialize as an oral surgeon.
Oh, that's a long story, Jesse.
I know. Well,
I do remember that conference well, because it was in a beautiful event. It was up in the gondola, and we were having this crazy dress up thing. And I still have the photo that we took together, because it was such a crazy night. Yeah. So if we want to rewind back, I mean, like every good kid, I do what my parents tell me, you know, and they always encourage me to go into the professionals and all that sort of stuff, professional degrees. I went down to Otago to do health sciences, mm-hmm. and with the goal to do medicine. But the thing is, my brother was a medic. He told me that you have to work really, really hard, and you know, even after you graduate, you're still not there. You still got to do more training and all this sort of stuff. And to be honest, that didn't really sing well with me, because I'm not as academic as my brother. You know, I just knew in myself that I'm just not the same person. Mm. But luckily, I met this random fella in one of my classes, and he was doing dent, but he was doing like a few papers kind of electively. Yep. And I just so happened, I still remember to this day, I sat next to him and he was like drawing teeth, you know, instead of listening to the lectures, he was drawing teeth. I was like, what's he doing? You know, this is a math lecture. What's he doing drawing teeth? So I started just, you know, randomly talking to him. And then he said, oh, I'm actually doing dentistry. And at that time, I was a little bit poo-poo-y dentistry. Like, oh, why would you want to do dentistry, right?
Yeah.
Because I would still have my goal to do medicine. But then he was telling me, oh, you're so cool. You get to give injections in second year. You get to do, you know, all this stuff with my hand. And that appealed to me, because I like doing things with my hands. I'm a very practical kind of guy, and I guess that's why it attracted me to oral surgery as well. Mm. But, you know, we can come back to that. But and then so I was like, oh, that's really interesting. And then one of my very, very good friends that I was studying with health science with, he's top of the class, you know, sort of person. And I said to him, hey, look, are you going for medicine or dentistry at the end of the year? And he goes, I'm actually doing dent. I want to do dent. He actually wanted to do dent. And he told me that both his parents are med doctors, and he actually told me that dentistry is so much better. So I guess at that time, that's when I kind of changed my mindset and go, oh, maybe dentistry is not too bad. And then the more I look into it, the more it appealed to me, you know, the more one-on-one with the patient, and, you know, you can kind of do quote unquote surgery straight away sort of thing. So that appealed to me. That really did. And I guess that's why I chose dentistry, I suppose. And it's been a great journey. When I moved to Australia is when I really started to know what I actually enjoy, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Because I got into a private practice in Armidale, New South Wales.
Yeah.
And this was one of those practices that we had no, we was rural, so we had no specialist support whatsoever, you know. And the guy I worked for has been there for over 30 years, so he's seen his mistakes, you know, he's seen what works and what doesn't. And that was an incredible resource for me, and he was an amazing mentor, really. And he put me in the right direction, right courses to do, you know. I learned a lot about ortho, pros, all that sort of good stuff. And I actually realized that I really wasn't very good at ortho and pros.
But pretty good, pretty dab hand at surgical skills. So,
well, yeah, and then I just thought, oh, look, you know, I'm okay, you know, I can do it, but I just realized that this is, you know, I'm just not cut out to do aesthetic work, you know, I'm just not very arty. And I think that's why I'm always so adamant to new grads to don't even think about specializing and all this sort of stuff when you graduate. I always say to them, look, go out and do dentistry, you know, and then your hand skills will improve, your people skills will improve, your treatment planning will improve. So if you then want to specialize, you'll be such a better specialist as a result of all that experience. But I guess that's where my bias comes from, because I was, 9 years before I decided to specialize?
Okay, which that is, long.
Yeah, it was a long time, man. People thought it was crazy to go back to specialty after such a long time in private, especially when I've really got like a private practice, you know, I've half owned it with the other guy.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've really got it all kind of, I guess, set in a way.
Yes.
But yeah, I decided to throw it all away and specialize, you know. It was a scary move, but worthwhile.
So I think that's a really interesting point, because you give up quite a lot, or you gave up quite a lot in order to specialize. So you must have had very strong feelings, strong passion, strong desires to specialize. And obviously we know you specialized in oral surgery. And I'm curious to ask how those passions were, nurtured along that journey. You said you had a good mentor in Armidale. Is that where you figured out that surgery was something you enjoyed or that you're good at? Or how did you get that realization?
I think it's the fact that I knew I was better at it. I had the brain for it, I suppose. I can think like that.
Yep.
And I knew I just wasn't a very prosy type person, you know.
Yep.
Because after oral surgery, the other thing I was thinking of specializing, believe it or not, was endo.
Ha, that was mine too.
Yeah. I hated endo as a student, as a dental student. I hated it. But then I grew to really love it, you know. And again, the reason why I grew to love that is because I had a really good endodontist friend in Sydney. I think he runs courses too. And he taught me about endo. I was like, wow, this is more than just root canal, you know. So this is really cool. So I think that was one of the main reasons to do it. And I think I was gradually getting less and less happier doing general dentistry as well.
Yeah.
And I think that was one of the big ones. And my wife and I were thinking, look, this is a big decision, but she supported me. I mean, if it wasn't for her support, I wouldn't be here today.
Mm.
And so the realization after 9 years, I think that's the key, because you wouldn't want to make this decision after 2 years of general dentistry and then realize, oh, crap, this specialty is actually terrible.
That's
the other problem that can happen.
Yeah.
So I was pretty sure. But just to put a little bit more of a mix to that story, Jesse, is that I never, when I went to do my postgrad, I was only meant to do 1 year. So I was only meant to do a diploma in oral surgery. So I was meant to do a diploma in oral surgery in Dunedin. And then my original plan was to come back to Armidale and bring the surgical skills I learned back to the rural community. That was the original plan.
So like a general practitioner with a special interest in oral surgery, basically.
Correct.
Restricted practice, basically.
Okay. Exactly. Restricted practice, all that sort of stuff. So that was my original plan. But then when I was down in Dunedin and I was going through a training program, they offered me the pretty much just said, do you want to do the specialty degree?
Mm.
So I was like, wow, you don't get that offer every day.
Yeah.
So you kind of, yeah. So, but then I spoke to my wife and we were like, shit, we have to uproot everything in Australia to do this. We had a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old at that time.
Wow.
Yeah.
That also means a couple of years without earning like you would have been earning if you're full-time in practice, right? So
correct.
That comes with so economic challenges and pressures as well, correct?
Yeah, 1,000%. So we had to think about all that. Yeah, so we had to see how to survive in Dunedin, you know, that sort of thing. As in a, with a student, well, you're not getting paid at all, really. It's full-time study, really, for the degree. So it was a challenge, I have to say. It was hard. And so that's why you don't choose specialty for the money, really. You really choose to specialize if you really, really have the passion for it. And I think one of the things that one of my consultants said to me is that part of your job as a specialist is education.
Mm.
Educating dentists, general dentists, students, et cetera. You know, that's your job as a specialist. Maybe that struck a chord with me somewhere deep down. I didn't realize it at the time, but maybe that kind of, you know.
Now, before we get into the education part, because I do want to explore that in a second, I can't help but ask the question, you've been a practice owner of a general practice and you've been a practice owner of a specialty practice. Now, obviously, they're different beasts in many different ways. For those people listening, what would you observe as some of the similarities but also some of the differences around owning a GP practice and a specialty practice?
There's a lot of similarities, actually. I would say there are more similarities than differences.
Yes.
Because I would say the only real difference, I would say, is we have less stock.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, because we really only have to do focus on one part of the industry. So that's helpful. So the infrastructure is a little bit different, especially for oral surgeries. The infrastructure is a little bit different. How you set up the rooms is a little bit different because we do a lot of sedations here in New Zealand. So I have a recovery room and all that sort of stuff. So obviously that the infrastructure is different that way. The admin is a little bit different because we're dealing with referrals rather than walk-ins so much or regular patient kind of six-monthly thing. So those are the differences there.
You've kind of got two customers, really, don't you? You've got the patient as the customer and the referrer.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Very much so. And so we actually have more, I guess, moving parts to our clientele, if you like.
Yep.
But in essence, it's still the same. When I started the business here in Dunedin, the specialty practice, I set up my appointment book, exactly the same as how I set it up as a general practice. So production in the morning and shorter appointments in the afternoon, blah, blah. You still got to look after your staff the same, train them the same, make sure they're all that sort of stuff is still exactly the same. Obviously I have to deal with registered nurses for me, but most other specialties are the same. So I would say that it's not that different. And that's why I was quite lucky that I've had 3 to 4 years of practice ownership in general practice before I did my specialty practice, because I could draw on a lot of that experience in hiring, in building the practice, designing the practice.
Yep.
So I designed my practice here in Dunedin, and I learned a lot about workflow and how to build a proper practice with the place in the right place, the cabinets in the right place, and all that sort of nitty-gritty things. I was very fortunate with that I got that experience as a general dentist owner before I did my specialty practice. Yeah, lots of similarities. I would say 90% almost.
Sui, one of the things that I've been very fortunate in my life is to kind of feel like I've had a ringside seat to lots of practices as they've been growing, right? And so to observe the things that go really well and to, you know, kind of understand what's working in the real world. And one of those practices that I've had the really good fortune to observe is yours. One of my observations that I think, you know, is really a credit to you is your people management. I think you're very, very good at people management. And I'm just wondering, if you said that there were some similarities, or in fact, basically the same in specialty practice and general practice. So I wanted to ask you what you've learned about people over the years in terms of building your team, being able to, you know, build that referral base so that those referrers keep coming back to you again and again and again. You've got to nurture that database, of course, as much as anything, even though your patients might only come to you once. You want the referrers to come back many, many times. What have you learned about building teams to deliver great experiences for your patients, great experiences for your referrers, and how have you been able to create some leverage in your practice? Because one of the things about specialty practices is there's not a lot of specialists around all the time. They don't graduate as many. So I'm just curious to ask you a little bit about, I guess, team and what you've done there to build such a good team, because it is a great team.
First off, I couldn't do it by myself, to be fair. I needed help in learning all these things as well. I needed a good coach. You know, luckily I'm part of a team called Practice Max, which has helped me along the way. And I've learned a lot from not just the specialists in that group, but also just talking to people in the community in that sort of people in the same mindset as well. So I've learned a lot from other people. I mean, a lot of these things that I implement now in my practice, in my business, you know, they're not mine. I mean, I've just learned from other people and generosity from other people as well. So that's one thing I'll say, is I can't take full credit for everything. I just learn from everyone as much as I can.
Yeah, but you're a really good implementer, sir. You're very humble, but you're a very good implementer, right? And so...
Well, yeah, I mean, that is true. It's just like it's quite funny, because when I teach oral surgery, it sounds simple, but it's the implementation that is key, isn't it? But the implementation bit is also the hardest part.
Yes.
Because it's scary.
It is.
It's scary. You might know what to do, but to actually do it, to actually go up to your staff and say, look, you know, we need to have a conversation here about whatever. Yeah. It is daunting. It is scary. But the more you do it, you know, the easier it gets over time. But I think one of the things I've learned the most, comparing to my practice back in the day in Armidale to now, I would say the number one lesson I've learned is hiring for culture. Mm. I think that is still number one. Like, for example, now I have two assistants that have never done dentistry. They have never looked inside a patient's mouth ever. But I hired them over experienced people, because they had the, you know, they were sitting in the right frame of mind, right culture. They will fit with everyone there. Like, often we would have two people that would be good for the role, and then we would think, oh, she's really experienced, blah blah. But then the other person might not know as much, but then you can see that she will gel with our team, and I would pick that person instead, you know. And we often, and then that brings me on to my second last point, which is you can't please everyone as well.
Yes.
So you just can't. I mean, we all like to be liked, but you just have to know that there are some people that just hate your guts, or there's some people that just don't like you for whatever reason. It's not personal. It's just, you know, and you just got to get over that. And the reason why I say that is because we would hire people that is less skilled or whatever, but we know that that person would gel with our same craziness, if you like, you know. And that other person could be a great worker, knows a lot, but if they don't gel with everyone else, it just makes the dynamics really difficult.
Yep.
And I would say that applies to my referrers as well. So when I first started, I tried to please every single referrer out there, tried to, you know, do everything, but there are some referrers, and you know, it's okay, that just don't like the way I do things, and that's okay. and that's okay. That took me a long time to swallow that pill.
Yeah.
Because I thought that what's wrong with me? I thought I'm doing the patient the best I can, blah blah. But some dentists or some practitioners just don't like the way I communicate, maybe, or how much I charge. Who knows? I don't know. So the referrers that do refer to me and like the way I do my treatment, or my associate do my treatment, my whole team really, I look after them. I look after them as much as I can, you know, and I give them everything I can, you know, education, support, all these things. I try not to make it too easy for them, though. I think that's one thing that I've learned over the years as well, is that I've been accused of making it too easy for my referrers, which is quite funny. if you think about it. And but yeah, so those two lessons I've learned, like hiring for culture, and you can almost apply that to my referrers as well,
yes,
right? Because they are also part of the team, really.
It takes a level of acceptance or self-confidence, maturity, I can't quite think of the right word, but to get to that point, because I think I've certainly gone through that experience as well, when you're trying to please everyone and, you know, why don't they like me? Or, you know, and even in the work that we do, you know, not everyone likes the way that we do things and not everyone likes the way I communicate. But what I appreciate what you've just shared there, Sue, and I think for people listening, this is a really good marketing lesson, and that is, your marketing is designed to attract the right people, but it'll also repel those that don't resonate.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Good point. Yeah, very much so. Yeah.
And being okay with that's okay, right? So, but like you, it took me a long time to be okay with that. So, hey, Sue, I wanted to ask you about the shift in some senses to education, because going back to what the professor said to you when you were a student in specialty training, you know, part of your role as a specialist is to educate people. I mean, there's different layers or levels of education. You can do that as a specialist through your referral letters. You can run, you know, evening things and so on. But you've taken it to another level now, which I think is tremendous, around helping general dentists improve their oral surgical skills. What was the need that you saw, or the gap that you saw, or the problem that you saw that you thought, I think I really need to kind of put something together here to help dentists, you know, in their practice?
I think the first reason is it has stemmed from my referrers, actually, because okay. I get a lot of referrers referring cases to me or whatever, and I always think to myself, hang on a second, I used to do this as a dentist. You know, I used to do this same tooth extraction or whatever when I was a general dentist, you know, without any specialty training. So that was the first kind of maybe clue that thinking maybe there's something, there's a disconnect there with the skills of general dentists. And then the second one is also because I've had the luxury of meeting a lot of undergrads in the last probably 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
And especially during after the COVID lockdowns, because a lot of them tell me that they just don't feel confident at all after graduation that they can take out a tooth.
Yep.
And it could be any tooth. They still don't feel confident at all. And this is not just for Kiwis, really. Even talking to some of my friends and colleagues in Australia, they say the same thing, because I have a lot of my classmates actually working in Australia, and they are obviously hiring dentists too. And just talking to them, that they go, I don't understand. You know, we did this when we were when we were graduated. So I don't, what's going on now? And look, the problem may be a lot bigger, but one thing I do know is that oral surgery training and confidence among new grads is quite low at the moment.
Yeah.
So that's my two drivers, really. And then I guess why I kind of want to do this more now, branching out and really focus on this, is because I enjoy it. I really do. I don't know. I just blah, blah, blah. I talk too much probably. But I do enjoy the teaching. I do enjoy the fact that I can get down to a general dentist level as well, because I've been there. I've been a general dentist for many years. I know the frustrations of running a general dentist practice, that, you know, you could be doing a root canal and then the next patient you've got to do a crown prep, and the next patient you've got to do an extraction.
Yeah.
So your brain needs to switch between those three things, and it's really hard to do that. And I often say to people that being a good general dentist is actually the hardest specialty out there, because you need to know everything. You need to stay in touch with every facets of dentistry, and you've got to be good at everything. And there's not, I mean, some are out there doing that. I mean, honestly, they are fantastic what they're doing, and I always admire their skill level with those dentists that can do everything so at such a high level.
Yeah.
But I know in myself that it is very difficult to do that, and it's not for everyone. So I think that, and all I want to do is let dentists be more confident in tackling tooth extraction, and know when to refer before you start it, and not refer it when it's halfway there or the roots in the sinus or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because no one wins. I mean, the specialist definitely does not win when you refer it like that, because it's harder. Everything is more difficult. And I don't want that. But the other thing is that I don't want dentists to think that I'm just here to tell you to refer, you know, and that's not my message at all, you know, because you don't know what you don't know. And if you know how to, I guess, really assess a tooth properly and really know what's happening, then you have a better idea on tackling the right cases, and then you will have the confidence to expand more, right? So I often talk about how you wouldn't do an upper 6-4 canal root filling as your first ever endo, right?
No.
I mean, that's just, you will be put off endo for the rest of your life if you did that.
Yep.
You want to, but you know, in dental school, you know an upper molar is difficult, right? They taught you that.
Yep.
So you know as a dentist when you graduate, you go, oh, no, that's a difficult one. So I'll just tackle the premolar or the canine or the central.
Yep.
But in exo, we seem to have that disconnect. We don't know what's hard or not hard. That's why you don't see me do a lot of hands-on courses, because I do a lot of this sort of thinking courses, because I'd rather you go away thinking about things more.
Well, it's interesting, because what I'm picking up here is a case selection methodology that you're thinking about. So obviously there's the, you're saying in endo, we're pretty clear, like an upper molar, four canals, probably on the harder end of the spectrum compared to a canine or a premolar or a central or whatever. But in exodontia, it's not as clear cut, or perhaps not as well spoken about or commonly spoken about. So getting clear, I'm sorry, I'm just in my mind, we want to differentiate between easy case, hard case, and then equally easy patient, hard patient. And the low-hanging fruit is obviously the easy case on the easy patient. The absolute no-go zone is the hard case on the hard patient. And then the hard patient with the easy tooth, or the easy patient with the hard tooth, are those kind of gray areas that probably trip some people up, I'd imagine.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And that's the perfect way to put it, Jesse. But the thing is, you can't just have the low-hanging fruit all the time.
No. You've got to grow.
You have to grow your pickings, if you like.
Yes.
So the trick is to know, okay, which ones in the other two quadrants, which ones are the ones that you can pick for your skill level? And I think that is where I'm coming at, because people don't know how to actually pick it. And so they either stay low-hanging fruit forever and sometimes stop picking the fruit, which is I see time and time again.
Yeah.
And then try stuff that is way too hard and then no one wins. It's not good.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really interesting. I think particularly if there's young dentists listening to this podcast, I think one of the things that I learned as a young dentist is that tackling treatment that doesn't go well actually erodes confidence faster than you can build it. And then you kind of, it's like a game of snakes and ladders. If you do, if you choose a case poorly and you end up in a bit of misery, you know, it can take some time to get back on the horse and to get back to where you were.
Yeah, 1,000%. And that's why I'm all about building confidence. I mean, my course in New Zealand is called Building Confidence. And it's because I like that, because you are wanting to build confidence, you know. It's like restorative dentistry. You know, you do your one filling and then you do a bigger filling and then you get confidence in that, and then you do a full mouth rehab, whatever. But there's a pathway, right? So there's the same pathway for exodontia as well. And that's the thing that's not talked about a lot at all. So you do need to slowly progress your skill level, get confidence in doing all that sort of stuff. Otherwise, your confidence will get hit so hard that you just don't want to do it anymore. And the thing is, what's interesting is because of the advent of social media, unfortunately, people are seeing all these amazing cases online. They're seeing all these beautiful grafts and implants and all this sort of stuff. And then they often say to themselves, why am I not doing that? Why can't I do that? Blah, blah. You know, why am I not good enough to do that? So they aim for that straight away.
Yeah.
But they don't get it. They don't understand that person has probably done thousands of easier cases before they get to that point. That's the first thing. The second thing could be that's the first good case that they've done. Another terrible case.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. Social media has a little bit to blame for this in a way, but it's good also, I guess. I don't know.
I think it is. I think it is. And I think, you know, as long as we understand that what gets posted is usually a highlight reel, and we shouldn't compare our everyday to someone's highlight reel. But now that we've crossed the Rubicon and mentioned the social media word, I do want to talk about DPR. And again, I mentioned a moment ago when I was asking you about the education, you know, what was the issue or the problem or the gap that you saw, and you spoke about that. And again, you saw another gap early on when built this Facebook group, which we all know is DPR. I think last time I checked, there's over 15,000 members. There's probably more now. You'll know better than
20.6, I think it was.
20.6. Okay, I'm a little bit off the mark, sorry. which is like that's a huge, huge group, right? And so firstly, I want to say kudos to you and having the foresight to create that. Going back to the early days, I remember when it was called Dental Product Review. So was it set up to be a product review group?
Yeah. I still remember the day I set it up, because it was when my Henry Schein rep came into the practice and she wanted to sell me this composite, or wanting me to change to this composite or some other thing. I remember it was the composite of some sort.
Yeah.
I don't even know what it was now. And I was like, man, I did not pay attention in biomaterials to know if this was any good. I'm like, damn it, I knew I should have listened to my biomaterials lectures. So I had no idea. And then this is back in 2011.
Yeah, wow.
2010, 2011. So I'm constantly lost. And the only people I get to talk to is my mentor at the practice. And he's very like, use whatever, I don't care sort of person. And then I'm like, well, who am I going to talk to? I don't have any dental friends here because there's such a small community. So Facebook was just coming up at that stage, I think. I think 2008, I think, is when it really started kicking off. Or, you know, the iPhone just came out, all this sort of stuff. I mean, I feel so old saying the iPhone just came out.
Hey, mate, I remember that. I had a BlackBerry, so, you know.
So then I thought, oh, Facebook. Isn't there this thing called Facebook groups? So I just looked it up. I said, is that a thing? Facebook groups, is that a thing? And I said, oh, yeah, that's a thing. And then so I thought, I'll just make one up. And then I just made one up called Dental Product Review, because I'm trying to review products, because that's what I wanted to do. Because all I wanted to do was, is this any good? That's all I wanted someone to tell me was, is this any good? So I just named it Dental Product Review, and invited a few of my friends that I already Facebook friends with.
Yeah.
And I never thought it would become the juggernaut that it is today. I never thought it would be a topic of dramas and popcorn on a weekly, monthly basis, or daily basis sometimes. But, you know, it's been a blessing and a curse at the same time for me and Steve and Sahil.
Well, yeah, the admins certainly earn their keep, don't they? They work hard. And we should give a shout out to the admins of DPR, because they do a tremendous job.
The thing, the funny story about that, I mean, Jesse, is that Steve was always online, right? He would reply to comments in a blink of an eye, and we all thought he was a bot or something. And I just one day asked, I just messaged him on, you know, on the Facebook Messenger. I said, hey, look, do you want to help me moderate this stupid thing? He goes, yeah, I'm already on it anyway, I might as well. I had no idea who Steve Tiang was. I never met the guy. I had no idea. You know, I only met him 3 times in my life.
Really?
Yeah. And we've always just met at conferences.
Isn't that funny?
The last time he was down with his partner driving through Dunedin, and we caught up for a quick yarn. And that was it, you know. And he's turned into one of my best friends, and I've only met him 3 times, you know. I feel like I can tell him anything.
Well, I've had a bit of interaction with Steve, and he is one of the nicest guys going around, which is tremendous, right? He's a really good dude.
The most genuine person you could ever hope for.
Yeah, he's a good guy. And how did Sahil come into the admin role?
I can't remember, but I actually cannot remember Sahil, but I think I knew him from back in dental school days.
Yeah.
And I don't know, we just thought, Steve and I just thought we need another person. Yeah. We need another hand because I was kind of like getting quite sick of it and all that sort of stuff. So I was kind of distancing myself a little bit and we had a few dramas along that time. And then Steve suggested Sahil and I said, oh yeah, I know Sahil. He's a good dude.
He's another good guy. Yeah,
he's another good guy.
He's a kind gentleman. And one of my favorite posts in DPR is always about someone asking about the search function. And Sahil is basically the search function because he kind of knows where everything is and is super organized and got it all covered off, which is amazing.
It's crazy. It really is.
Yeah.
But look, I mean, I have to be honest, like I wouldn't have met some amazing people if it wasn't for DPR, with which I've not have any chance. I mean, you were one of them as well, Jesse. Like, I don't think I would have ever, I don't know how I would have ever met you if it wasn't for DPR and, you know, a lot of amazing people, amazing connections I've made through DPR. Obviously, there's a lot of people running amazing courses now because of DPR and it's fantastic. It really is. And I guess it's still, my main goal is still reviewing products. I guess we kind of still do that, kind of. So we're kind of still fulfilling the original goal of the group. It's more than that now, right?
It's way more than that, man. I want to take a moment to congratulate you. I really think it's a great forum for people to talk because dentistry can be, I think, quite an isolating and lonely experience. Whether you're a dentist or a therapist, hygienist or any particular role, but I do think that having that space to talk to other people is really important and that sense of community that it's created. So I think it's a tremendous service to the profession. So I really want to say great job. I think it's a tremendous service. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. I really mean it because it gives people a place to talk. It gives people a place to be heard, to be seen, to ask a question that they might not necessarily have another opportunity or forum. Because I remember going to some of the live events and, yeah, I usually use the Pro Society as an example. I'm not down on the Pro Society in any way, but to ask a question in that environment is sometimes a little bit intimidating. But being able to ask a question, whether it's anonymous or in person, or via your own post in DPR, I think it's really good because on the whole, the community is very supportive, and I think it's a really good thing. I can't help but wonder what the cursed part is. Is it just the sheer weight of numbers and the work?
No. The curse is sometimes, I guess, over the years. I mean, over the 13 years of DPR, there has been a few, I guess, interesting developments within the group, a few personalities, I should say, that has been, I guess, upset with how we've moderated or they didn't feel like they were given a fair chance or they don't see our point of view or whatever it is. Again, it comes back to the you can't please everyone sort of mentality.
Totally.
And back in the days, I didn't have that strength to say I can't please everyone. And I tried to please everyone in DPR when I was sole moderator. And that created more issues because people think that I was, I guess, taking his side or her side or, or whatever.
Mm.
And obviously, if I'm taking that person's side, 50% of people would not like that, right? So, and I think that was one of my learnings as well throughout the group, that you just can't please everyone. And even now, even to this day, we have had a few posts or people posting things that may be inappropriate or things that are not warranted in a dental group, perhaps. And, the admins, because we talk as well, obviously, and then we say, oh, should we just delete this post and all that sort of stuff. Now, back in the day, we would be very diplomatic about the whole thing. We would, message the person and say, hey, look, this post have caused some ruckus, whatever. But now, us three unanimously think that, look, this is not warranted, we would just stop comment on it or even delete. But we would always try and be fair as much as we can, because we're not judge, jury, and executor. We want to be fair because we are all like that. I guess that's one thing good about Steve Sahil and myself is that we all kind of have the same sort of philosophy for the group, that we work well together like that we trust each other's kind of decisions as well. So sometimes one of us would say, look, this guy's being a total whatever. We're just going to delete it. And we're like, okay, cool. That's the really the curse part. And it's really to do with, again, not being able to please everyone. Some people just get upset about one comment or something. And then like, come on. Seriously?
Yeah, I know. There's a whole world of stuff happening out there. We don't need to stress over a comment here or there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you always get the posters that post funny stuff. I mean, I can name off a few people already that are just posting silly things all the time. But we know that I guess we know who they are in a way. And I guess from a new person coming into Deep Purple, we say, oh, this is inappropriate or whatever. And then we're like, hey, chill. Just chill. Just chill. It's so...
Read the room for a while. Yeah. And then
just take five.
So my question is, where do you see the future of DPR?
Gosh, you know, I haven't really thought about it, to be honest. I just let it run, you know, like as long as people are still benefiting from the group, I'm okay. As you said, there's a wealth of posts, 13 years of posts on that group, and people can use the search function and look up stuff in the past.
And just for clarity, that there's not necessarily Sahil. Let's do Sahil a favor. Let's not tag Sahil function. when we need something found. sorry, mate. I didn't mean to.
That's quite funny. Sahil, mate, if you're listening, you're awesome, dude. Bro.
He is a good man.
What's interesting is that I have had in the last probably month or two, I have had a few people liking a comment that I have made 9 years ago.
Wow.
So last week, I think it was last week or the last 2 weeks, I got a notification saying so-and-so has liked my post, right? And I was like, what is this post? I didn't post anything on DPR. And I clicked on it. And it was a comment that I made about some random thing, about some other random thing 9 years ago.
Wow.
So people are going back into the archives and reading specific things that they potentially need to read about. I don't know.
Yeah.
So people are using the search function. So it is an incredible resource. It's almost like dental history almost that you can look up.
It's funny you should say that. That's what I was thinking too. Like there's the chronology there, isn't there? It's like, you know, it's like that. You get to go back and look at the history of dentistry in New Zealand and Australia and Singapore and find out what was relevant and topical at the time, which is great.
It is actually quite remarkable. Like I can think of two examples. Like there was a post on Everex. It was a post on Everex. It was like a flowable core composite or something. And I think I was one of the first ones to post about Everex because I got to use it one day and I thought it was amazing or whatever. And someone commented on the post saying, oh, how are you going with this product? And I'm like, dude,
I'm an oral surgeon.
I haven't done a root canal. I haven't done a root canal in 10 years. So I don't know, hopefully it's still okay. So Everex is one. And then more to do with oral surgery, the physics forceps. I don't know whether you know,
Jesse. Physics forceps. Yeah.
So it was like the bee's knees, you know, a couple of years ago. And then I put a couple of posts up on some cases I did with the physics forceps. And I had someone message me privately because they saw who I am, blah, blah. So they messaged me privately and go, oh, so do you think I should get the physics forceps or whatever? So I gave him my 2 cents. So you know, people are using it, and you'd be ashamed if I just go delete. So I know there's been a lot of groups that branched out of DPR, and that's great. You know, and I guess, you know, if DPR started that precedence, fantastic. You know, great, whatever. I don't pour power to the people that doing that. But yeah, I mean, DPR, I guess, is one of the biggest, if not the biggest, Australian, New Zealand Facebook dental group. And I would like to just keep it going as long as people are benefiting from it and no one is getting, you know, bullied or whatever, using it for some other bad purpose or something else, then I'm okay, you know, I'm okay to keep going.
Perfect. Mate, I just want to shift gears for a second, if we can. I want to talk about weightlifting for a moment, anyone who knows you from social media will know that weightlifting is an important part of your life, and it's something we spoke a little bit about off air. And I wanted to ask you, what is it about weightlifting that you find really enjoyable, but equally, what do you find challenging about it, apart from the heaviness of the weights themselves?
I think weightlifting recently has changed my life, to be fair.
Yeah.
So let's start from the scratch first, Jesse. There's weightlifting, powerlifting, CrossFit, and bodybuilding. So those are your four key ones at the moment.
And just by way of confession, before this call we started recording, I got it right for the first time in a long time, so I'm feeling like I'm on solid ground now. So
you did. You're in the good books now.
Yeah, I'm in the good books now. So it took me a while.
Yeah, it took you a while. So the two that people get confused a lot is powerlifting and weightlifting. Mm. So powerlifting is where people predominantly focus on a deadlift, a bench press, and a back squat. So those are your three movements, I guess. Mm-hmm. Whereas weightlifting is what they do in the Olympics, which mm-hmm. is the two movements of snatch mm-hmm. and clean and jerk. So without getting too technical, the reason why I'm so passionate about this is because I've always been quite sedentary, and going through post-grad training was the most brutal sedentary thing ever. Mm. It definitely wasn't very kind to your body, but it was in the first couple of months in my new practice here in Dunedin, in a specialty practice, and I was taking out some eights or something, I can't remember now, but my back just spasmed, you know.
Oh, wow.
And after the case, I had to go lie down, and I couldn't move. I was in pain. And I was thinking to myself, holy crap, I've just built this business and this practice, and I can't move. You know, I'm the sole provider. There's no other, you know, there's no other practitioners I can get for locum. There's no such thing in oral surgery world. Mm-hmm. And I said to myself, I have to do something. This is not good. Then I talked to physios and they said, you got to go to the gym. I'm like, oh God, I hate going to the gym. Like, that's like the worst thing ever. I hated every second of going to the gym, running on a treadmill or doing weights mindlessly. I just hated that. Mm. I guess one of the reasons why I hated it is because I didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
It's not my area. You know, so I don't even know if I'm doing the right thing. So I think one of the things that attracted me to weightlifting is that it's such a technical sport.
Mm.
And I never realized that about weightlifting. So when I say technical, I mean, you could have someone that is less stronger than me,
mm.
but lift heavier because their technique is better.
Mm.
And I think that's one of the things that attracted me to it, because I'm thinking, wow, these are heavy weights, but yet someone weaker can actually lift it because they have better technique. And that fascinated me. In a way, it's the same reason why someone smaller or less strong can take out a wisdom tooth better than someone who's apparently stronger, you know. And there's always the, I guess, people think that you need to be strong to take out teeth, right?
Mm.
So that kind of attracted me to the sport. And I think that my coach had a lot to do with it as well. You know, he was so good at teaching me the technique and all that. But one thing that kept me going, and I think this is the key, one thing that kept me going in the sport is because not only did I feel better and that I'm not getting back pain anymore for the first time in my career, the thing that kept me motivated was the fact that in the sport of weightlifting, you can compete.
Mm.
You can do competitions.
Right.
So I'm not going to the competitions to win medals or break records. I don't do it for that because I'm not that sort of athlete, if I can even call myself an athlete. But you're going to those competitions for yourself. Again, like, you know, you're doing it for your own personal benefit, that you can say, wow, I just did that on stage in front of everyone. You know, that's a cool feeling.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very mental game because you're standing in front of everyone. Everyone's staring at you in a very tight and revealing suit. That doesn't help either.
No.
And you have to lift the weight. So mentally, it's a really good thing to flex your gray matter. I mm. think that's really good too.
Mm.
But that gave me a goal, you know. So I have a reason to train. I have to go, right, you know, like I was telling you off air, Jesse, I want to make it to Masters Nationals this year.
Yeah.
So my coach have, you know, given me the program up to that in November. So I have to stick to it. If I don't, then I know I'm not going to do well. So again, it's like studying for an exam. You know, you have a goal
mm-hmm.
and you have a focus, because if you don't have that focus, and I think a lot of us hate going to the gym because we have no It's like go run on the treadmill for 10 minutes. I'm like, so I'm for what? For? You have no motivation. And I think that's one of the reasons why I gravitated to the sport, why it kept me going in the sport, and why I loved the sport actually so much, because it's you're not just training the physical, you're training the mental. And why I like weightlifting more than powerlifting, I'm sorry for all the powerlifters out there, it's because it's a very functional movement. You know, you're lifting weights over your head, so you're moving your joints in your full range of motion rather than a small range of motion. And we need that sort of functional movement in dentistry, because in dentistry we don't move a lot at all, to be honest. I mean, it's such a micro movement type of job that we often get back pain because we're not utilizing our core more and all that sort of stuff. And weightlifting really encouraged that. And but like anything, you need a good coach. You need someone to watch you lift to make sure you're not doing silly things, and you don't get injured that way.
And that's the thing, isn't it? A coach can see the things that you can't see.
Yeah.
I heard once, actually, Tiger Woods had 5 coaches at the top of his game, and someone said, why 5? I guess because they all see things I can't. And yeah. I think that's really interesting. Just what I want to ask you about your weightlifting, Sui, is what have you learned about yourself? What have you figured out about you that you now understand better?
Well, I mean, I never thought I would be doing weightlifting. That's the first thing. But I think one of the things that I've showed myself that I can do is I could do something that I never thought I could ever do. Like, honestly, I never in my wildest dreams think that I could put on my nation's colors and compete for my country. Never. In a sport.
Yes.
And 2 years ago, I managed to do that. I know it's for Masters. It's not some sort of international Olympics or whatever.
Still the nation's colours, mate.
Exactly. I got to put on a suit that has a silver fern on it with New Zealand written on the back and go out there and lift for my country. You know, and that is, I never thought I would be in that position ever. You know, and if anything, that's taught me that, hey, look, if you... You know, it might sound cliche, but if you put your mind to it, you'll achieve it sort of thing. It just goes to show that hard work can pay off.
Yeah.
And because it is hard, your training is hard. I often complain to my coach that, oh, this is so hard. I was like, well, this is training. This is not a day spa. So, you're training, you're getting better. I use that mental strength in my dentistry a lot, and I try and pass that on to my students a lot because a lot of students, they get frustrated with oral surgery. Why can I not do this? It's like, you've got to stick to it. You know, you've got to stick to the right path. You've got to train. You've got to train your hand skills. You've got to train your gray cells to think about the surgery. You know, all that stuff. And often in dentistry, if we are just doing another filling or doing another crown prep, we get into that robotic kind of everything is the same again. And you stop thinking. And that's dangerous, I feel, because you miss stuff when you're not thinking. One thing I've learned is that, you know, I'm not old enough to do this. You know, we were talking about how old we were off air, and I like to think I'm still young, even though my number might not reflect that. But, you know, I want to stay healthy and young. So it is, got to put your mind to it. And I think, you know, it's the strength in that.
Yeah, 100%. And just to bring our audience into a little bit of that conversation we had off air, we were talking about, I've been reflecting on longevity. I've got my age is a little bit greater than yours, mate, by a bit. But I was reflecting on some work by a doctor called Peter Attia, and he was talking about, you know, things you want to be able to do if you make it to 100, you know, lifting things above your head, getting up off the ground if you're playing with grandkids and all those sorts of things. And his point, one of the points he made, was that as you get older, it's just harder to put on muscle mass. And I was saying, I think the weightlifting that you're doing, I think is obviously great on lots of different levels, but one other level is helping you with longevity into the future, which I think is great. So I want to ask you just one last question as we wrap up, if we can. And the question I'd really like to ask you is, what advice would you give to your younger self if you could talk to young Sui, maybe as an early stage practice owner, or even at a different stage if you choose? What would be the thing that you would just like to say to your younger self, or what do you wish you'd known when you were younger, is maybe another way of asking the same question, but what would you say?
Oh, this is a tough one. What would I say to myself? Gosh, one of the things I worried about when I was younger, a lot actually, is what if, what if, what if? You know, if I do this, what if this happens? You know, I would catastrophize everything in my head, thinking all the worst case scenarios that can happen with any decision I had to make, including asking a girl I like out or something. Because we have that fear, right? Oh no, what if she says no or whatever? And that goes with dentistry, that goes with everything, really. And I used to just think of worst case scenarios all the time. But I never thought about the other side, the flip side. What if it did go well?
Yeah.
What if it did go well? If you did this, you know? Yeah, sure, you got to work out the pros and cons and all that stuff. But I was so focused on the cons, you know, that I just wasn't brave enough to even act on it, to even give myself the chance of the pros, right? You're never going to do it. And in a way, that's the weightlifting thing, actually, because if you don't try and lift that weight, because here's the thing, right? If I'm going for a PB, right, a personal best, I never lifted that weight over my head. Never, right? Because it's a personal best.
Yeah.
But if you don't lift it, if you don't even try to do it, how are you going to know you can do it? And I think definitely, actually, now I'm thinking about it, weightlifting has given me that strength to go, hey, you got to give it a go. Stick to your technique and all that sort of stuff. So I'm digressing now. But
that's okay.
But if anything, that is the one thing I did a lot when I was younger, a lot. Having kids or whatever. You know, what if I'm too young? What if I'm too old? Whatever, all this sort of thing. So if there's one advice I can give myself is that, hey, look, don't stress so much. you know, think about the good stuff that can happen if you did this as well. Yeah, you're not going to win every single time, but you're giving yourself more chances to win if you go for it. Yes, we get disappointed when it doesn't go our plan, but take that as a lesson and take that and go, okay, I've learned that. The next time I'll do that. You know, and I think I stress so much about the mistakes that I forget that you can actually succeed.
Yeah, and you succeed, you have, mate, in great ways, and as we like to say, in spades. You have achieved immensely, mate, in all the things you've done, whether it's, you know, general dentistry, oral surgery, weightlifting, obviously starting up Facebook groups, education, and so on. So, mate, every post has been a winner.
Thank you, Jesse.
It's my pleasure, and I mean it. You've done very, very well. I think what I'd really like to wrap up by saying is thank you for all you do for the profession, whether it be for your referrers, whether it be through your education, whether it be through DPR. I have always found you to be a very generous person, Sui, and I just want to take a moment from all of us in the dental profession to say thank you for the work you do, mate. You're a good man, and we're all really grateful to have you around the traps, buddy. You're a good fella.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot to me, Jesse. And look, I'm just one person, and I, you know, building a community has always been my dream, my goal, and a community of like-minded people, you know. And yeah, I mean, that means a lot that you say that, to say those words, and I really appreciate that. I don't think anyone have said that to me, to be honest, Jesse.
Well, I'm sure many people think it, mate. And I'm sure when we get to post this this podcast episode, I'm sure there'll be some people who would share that sentiment. So, mate, from all of us here, thank you so much for taking the time to come and hang out with us. Once again, really appreciate it. And look forward to talking to you soon, my friend.
Absolute pressure, Jesse, anytime.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.